Well, good morning and welcome to the Daily Connection here on KDOV. I'm Pat Daly. It's about 4 minutes now after 10 o'clock, and we got a great program ahead. It's always a program I look forward to because we have Matt and Chris here in the studio. It's a time for another look at church history. Going to look at one of the really neat people in our family album today, and one you might not think of right off the hand because, you know, it's not mentioned in most Christian history books. It's certainly not mentioned in the Bible, but, you know, it's one of those people that I would really admire a lot, and that's an artist.
Definitely.
So, guys, thanks for coming today, and who are we doing today?
Oh, we're going to be talking about the divine Michelangelo.
Or Big Mike, as we
like to call him.
Big Mike. Is that the guy who would be like Mike?
Yeah, definitely. Okay. As Yoda would say, all talent has he.
He does.
Yes. Yes, he does, man. Michelangelo.
Michelangelo. Michelo. Did I say that?
I said
Michelangelo. That's
Buonarroti.
Buonarroti, yeah. He did have a last name.
He had a lot of names that we can't pronounce, but we're going to stick with those
and
two.
And some that we shouldn't even say, probably. But anyway. Well, you know, Michelangelo was a sculptor, a painter, an architect, a first-class grouch, a devoted family man, a multimillionaire, and most importantly, he was a disciple of Jesus Christ. And while Christopher Columbus was exploring the New World and Martin Luther was touching off a firestorm of the Reformation, Michelangelo was making history and forever influencing the art of the Western world from Rome and Firenze, Italy, or otherwise known as Florence. You know, Michelangelo's art is recognized the world over, and typically it always followed a theme of Scripture. And, you know, Matt, that was one of his beliefs, was the fact that that God was directing his hands and looking for... it was his job, of course, to discover the art that was within a stone or a piece of art that he was doing. But he really felt that God was directing him in his work.
It was a serious calling he had artistically. And as a matter of fact, as we see later in the program, it's what allowed him to even put his talents to work in areas that he really would not have chosen. But he felt, well, if God has directed me to do this, that's what I'll do.
And Michelangelo believed that beauty was one of the ways that God communicates with man. And he felt that was a very important part of his philosophy. Something else that's interesting about Michelangelo that not a lot of people realize is that he was a member of what was known in his time as the Third Order. And that was a group of men that, while they were not full-time clerics or monks, they did the best they could to observe hours of prayer, hours of worship, and all that while engaged in their secular work.
You know, it's interesting, too, because he really manifested a spirituality that was not necessarily characteristic of that time, especially in Italy, you know, which is just a hodgepodge of city-states, you know, Florence, Venice, you know, Milan, all warring against each other, and the Papal States. As a matter of fact, as a young man, Michelangelo came to the notice of the Medicis. Everybody's heard of them, mm-hmm. You know, the hugely powerful Florentine family. And as a matter of fact, it's very interesting that in 1492, which is really where we're going to pick up his life, 1492, not only was Columbus sailing across the ocean blue, but Lorenzo the Magnificent, the Medici of history, dies. And his arch-rival, Rodrigo Borgia, the father of Lucretia and other persons of note, becomes our favorite, not really, Pope Alexander VI. And I don't even know if we want to call him evil, but he was simply the most carnal man to ever sit on that throne. I don't believe we'll be seeing Rodrigo when we get home.
You think?
Oh, boy. But anyway, so the Borgias are now in power, having, in effect, purchased the papacy. Mm-hmm. And so Michelangelo's a little out of favor right now and has lost his patency and ends up just messing around. And at the age of, 23, he ends up carving the Pietà, the Madonna grieving the dead Christ. And everybody has seen that. I'm looking at the book this morning during, you know, instead of devotions, like the spiritual guy I am, I spent 15 minutes, I'm just looking at it. It's beyond incredible. The detail, you know, it's life-likeness. And nobody did this like him. I mean, it was
Nobody's done it since?
No. I mean, he did things with marble and stone that everybody around him is looking at this 23-year-old kid going, no way, this can't be done. Well, he follows this up. I mean, he did that in Rome. Mm-hmm. He had to leave because the Borgias were in charge, but then the Borgias went to Rome as Pope, so he had to go back to Florence. And everybody was kind of talking about his latest, the Pietà, and so they commissioned him to do the big statue of David.
Ah, yes.
And everybody has seen this. And you guys, mm-hmm. It's 18 feet tall, and it's in Florence to this day. Well, that did it. On top of the Pietà, he does this David. Took him 3 or 4 years, Chris,
yes,
to carve this out. But it stunned Europe, basically. After that, he was like Mike Jordan, Mel Gibson.
Exactly.
He was a celebrity.
Yeah. It's interesting, too. I want to say a couple things about the David statue. Right now, it's sitting in a museum. But, of course, when it was made, it stood in front of the City Hall of Florence. Okay, they actually rearranged the entire downtown area to show off this statue. And the theme of the statue is David in the moment he decides to fight Goliath. And it's not the moment after he killed him. It's the moment.
Which up to this time, everybody has portrayed David with his foot on Goliath's head, the moment of victory.
But this is the moment of David's bravery. And the idea behind it was whoever must govern the city of Florence must do so justly and bravely. And it's an incredible statue anyway, but the look on his face is definitely one of incredible bravery. Yes. Yeah. And the other thing that's interesting about that statue is the fact that Leonardo da Vinci, of course, who was an old man at the time, he came back to Florence around this time and quite frankly was hacked off at all the all the celebrity that was taken away from him.
Those young kids
and give it to Michelangelo. And Leonardo da Vinci actually remains an enemy of Michelangelo for the rest of his mortal life.
What a shame. What if they had collaborated? My goodness. Oh, well.
Well, it seems like Leonardo da Vinci is the poster child of, you know, the Renaissance man. But, you know, a great painter to be sure, but I don't know why. Of course, he was kind of crusty. Of course, you say Michelangelo's kind of a crusty guy, too?
He was a world-renowned grouch. He had a bad temper, apparently, and was just renowned for his outbursts of anger sometimes, you know. But creative people kind of, that's one of the indulgences, I think, that, you know, you often have to give them. Wow. Well, you know, after he does the David statue and fulfills that commission, he gets called back to Rome by Pope Julius II. And he's commissioned to do Pope Julius's tomb, which this is something, of course, you know, here in the United States, we don't emphasize the importance of having a nice tomb for burial unless you're really somebody important. But in Europe, you know, the cathedrals are filled with some of the most phenomenal pieces of art were done around people's graves. And Julius brings him in, and there's going to be something like 40 life-size statues that Michelangelo is going to carve for the tomb of Julius II. It's going to put him on the map when he dies as one of the most famous people. Well, basically, the project runs out of money, and Julius comes to Michelangelo, and he says, well, I'll tell you what, you know, why don't you put away the chisel and get a paintbrush? I got a little ceiling I need you to paint in one of my chapels here on the Vatican grounds. And that, of course, becomes the Sistine Chapel. And, you know, Michelangelo knew how to paint, but that was definitely not his main talent. He was a sculptor.
As a matter of fact, this project was so huge and so daunting that everybody knew about it. Everybody knew the Pope was looking for somebody to paint this, and they were actually trying to fob it off on each other. You know, Michelangelo would tell the Pope, oh, you know, Your Holiness, really, you need somebody with more talent than me. You need Raphael. And Raphael over on the other side of town, oh, no, Your Holiness, I could never do this. We need the best we have, which is obviously Michelangelo. They were dodging at this hot potato as hard as they could, but Michelangelo got the nod. Bless his soul. And he just hunkered down and went for it.
And it's, you know, it's absolutely, the Sistine Chapel is the most well-known and most influential.
The largest, most beautiful piece of art probably in existence on the face of the planet.
And
as a matter of fact,
in Western civilization.
As a matter of fact, words don't really do it. So for the benefit of our radio audience, I brought this.
Can you guys see this?
Yeah, hold up to the microphone.
Mic I look at that. I mean,
I know it, that is pretty.
And look over here.
It's pretty phenomenal.
I, just I'm telling.
And we've
you.
Reduced to 12 inches there. What yeah. really is about? How what are the dimensions of that thing anyway?
Isn't it's 500 meters by.
It's like 137 meters. I'll tell you what. The dimensions of the chapel itself are built based on the dimensions of the ark. I mean, the tabernacle of the ark.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And
the so it's a
proportions.
Big.
Well, it's a fortress. Yeah. It actually has battlements on top of it. It was built at a time when the papacy wanted to make a statement about, we're a real life political power.
We're here to stay.
Yeah.
And this picture on the Sistine Chapel, the frescoes there, they contain 9 scenes from the Book of Genesis, but then also many of the prophets and then the ancestors of Jesus Christ. And mixed in there, which is so interesting to me, but is so much part of the Renaissance period as well, is that there's Greek sibyls, mm-hmm. which the Sibylline prophets, of course, typically were women, and yet it's believed that he paints them as men. And they're interspersed in there, which is why. Why Greek prophets, pagan prophets, but somehow or another they're intermixed there as decor within this fantastic thing that depicts so much of the Old Testament
Derrigere,
scriptures.
Style of the day.
And, well, he really did. I mean, everything he did changed the shape of art. And this is the outbreak of the Renaissance. You know, Constantinople has fallen to the Turks. All the most precious documents have now made their way to Rome and influenced new things. Gosh, Michelangelo was pioneering new areas and new paths in art every step he took. Well, as a matter of fact, when he signed the Pietà, this was the period of time where, up until this point, artists were just craftsmen. You know, nobody knew their name. And with Michelangelo and Da Vinci, really, people began to remember who made this. And that has continued to this day.
He, when he did this, too, you know, really, the design of the human figure in Western art was forever changed. This has over 400 life-size figures that he painted on his back, up on scaffolding.
Ruined his health.
He said later on in life that it literally destroyed his body, and he was a young man. I mean, he was just in his
30s. Yeah, 37 when he was dead.
When he did this, and it took him 4 years up there to do that. Later on, of course, the Sistine Chapel, before we move on to his next greatest work, the Sistine Chapel, he did the ceiling, and then in his 50s, he came back, and he painted the altar area, which has the famous picture, The Last Judgment.
Last Judgment. Really?
And that was based on, it was based on the Bible, obviously, but he was a big fan of Dante, who mm-hmm. wrote, of course, the Divine Comedy, which has the pictures of bliss, purgatory, and hell. And he read that. I guess he was a friend of Dante's and may have even done an illustrated version of it for him. But he used that as his inspiration, and that was the theme of the picture on the front of the altar. When Christ returns, sends the blessed to heaven and the cursed into perdition. And one of the interesting things about that was the fact that when it was painted, everybody was nude. And then after his death, there was a movement for cleaning up of sacred art. And so a crew came in and painted fig leaves over everybody at a later date. But then he, you know, several years transpire, and in his 70s he takes on St. Peter's Basilica.
Now this is huge. Now here is a guy on a throwaway painting creates the most beautiful, huge, complex definition of painted art in the planet. His sculpting pretty much is the top of the pyramid even to this day. So why not just create the most magnificent piece of architecture on the planet too? Why not, you know? He's got a whole free afternoon. Basically, that's what he does. He takes a design for the new cathedral that is just way too big. It's just, I mean, it's confused, it's splattered, it's, you know, they're trying to make a big statement. He not only condenses it to a tight, compact, beautiful cathedral design, but he opens it up and fills it with light. And then he designs a revolutionary dome that is more elongated in shape rather than the old Roman style. And it's some of the technicalities are not that interesting, but basically what he ended up building, he didn't even live to see the end of it. I think his assistant finished it up for him. But basically St. Peter's, the Dome of St. Peter's Basilica in Rome, becomes the model for, gosh, the Capitol building in the U.S., St. Paul's in London. You know, you visit any European
capital on the continent, and you're going to see several copies.
It's the sign of authority. It really became the sign of authority in the Western world.
You bet.
And, you know, it's just interesting when you think about that. I mean, I don't know if you ever tune in, but around Christmas time, I always think it's fun to tune in and see the Pope do the midnight mass, in Rome. That's happening right there, and it's interesting to think that Michelangelo built that place, that was his... That was his work of art.
Of course, there's a fun thing, too, is remember that it was expensive to build, and it was the fundraising effort for St. Peter's that got that one monk into trouble and made Martin Luther so mad that he started the Reformation up north.
Well, they say that building projects are always divisive. and, of course, it was a building project that led to the Reformation.
That's right, by golly. Well, everything Michelangelo did in the art basically put his stamp on it and sent everything in that direction. I forgot that one part. He was the first one to portray Mary in the Pietà as not really grieving
over the
fallen Christ. Wasn't that the case?
In Northern European art, they always had portrayed Mary with excessive grief and sorrow. It's like the more miserable they could make her at the scene of holding Christ in her arms, the better. And in Michelangelo's Pietà, she looks serene. And people have said that he was making a theological statement by putting that look on her face. The idea being that, yes, this was necessary, that Christ's ministry was for the blessing of us all, and though it was hard on her, that it was a necessary to do that. And so it actually creates a different look in that kind of art from that point forward.
Mm-hmm. Well, he was an interesting guy. As a matter of fact, I fleshing this out, when we choose somebody to do a bio like this on, we're not always sure of the conclusion that we're going to come to in terms of their spiritual dimension, their mm-hmm. discipleship. Sometimes you really have to flesh it out, and it's implied by things, or you check the fruit of that particular life. Mm-hmm. And I think that for Michelangelo, he definitely manifested the fruit, his willingness to go where he felt God was leading him, and he just utterly poured out his talents. And gosh, he had a lot of, like Chris said, he was crusty, he was hard to get along with. You'll hear that he was kind of miserly, he sort of lived as a pauper, even though he had plenty of money after he became famous. And he was a conflicted soul as well. I think he just about remained celibate his entire life. And of
course, was he married or no?
No, he never married. Never really had relationships. And of course, the gay community jumps on that and says, "Well, of course he was gay. Yay!"
Just look at the Sistine Chapel as some sort of erotic.
Gracious goodness! He was a monk. Basically, he was a monk, and the energy that he might have poured into a marriage or raising a household, he poured into gracing us with the most beautiful works of art that have ever existed. And it's hard to dismiss something like that. We don't really have a lot of his writings. We don't really have a lot of his notes. Some of the few that he has indicate a real concern with his relationship with God. When he was younger, he viewed God as being pretty distant, pretty forbidding. But his notes and his diaries as he got older indicated that he was growing much more aware of the dimension of God's love and grew very eager towards the end of his life to be home with God. He was tired of the politics and bending over backwards and painting upside down. Gracious goodness. So we have to go on record and say we think Michelangelo's going to be waiting for us up there when we get home. Do you think he'll be working on an art project?
I don't know. One of the things that I wanted to just add to that was the fact that later in life, he had looked at art as an unqualified good early in his career. And towards the end of his life, he did actually have some concern that possibly doing sacred art might be some sort of a form of idolatry.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's kind of an interesting thing that even because undeniably, you take a look at his art, and for me, I find that it inspires devotion, even as you had mentioned that you just stared at the Pietà for a while.
Fantastic.
That his work does inspire devotion to the Lord, I think. But even he had some reservations, and some real concerns about that. When he died, he actually, for someone who suffered in ill health and all that, he died at age 89. So he worked pretty much all the way to the very end.
Which was what year?
Oh,
Gosh, 67, 65,
67, okay.
Yeah, so you know, it's an interesting thing, though, how when we're engaged in something that we love so much, you see people live a long life.
Yes,
when they,
indeed.
You know, when they love what they do. But anyway, he was so popular, you know, he died in Rome, and they had to smuggle his body out of town, hidden in a pile of hay, and to bring it back into Florence.
Oh,
yeah,
gosh.
They wanted to bury him in Rome, but he wanted to be buried in his hometown of Florence.
You know, I have to say, we both recently have watched that Agony of the Ecstasy movie.
Yes, indeed.
With Charlton Heston and,
Rex Harrison.
Rex Harrison. It's fabulous, you know, and I'm... Of course, the politically correct and the postmodern people in the academic community are going to cry to high heaven that it paints too rosy a picture. Maybe it does, but you know what? The sad fact is that for the academic community of today, you can't get credentials unless you're willing to drag somebody in the dirt. You know, you have to chisel away at either you got to demonstrate a hatred for America, or you have to demonstrate how Western civilization is worthless and imperialist. So when you listen to some of the experts and how they deal with not just Michelangelo, but some of the other representatives of Western culture,
sure,
take that stuff with a grain of salt. Those are guys out hunting PhDs and grants.
Absolutely,
you know, they've got an agenda.
And so instead of celebrating someone that we ought to celebrate, mm-hmm. they want to destroy and tear down.
Absolutely. Don't buy into that.
That's totally... You know, one of the things I think that we can learn from Michelangelo is the fact, you know, he was best known, of course, as a sculptor, and yet his most recognized piece of work is the Sistine Chapel. He considered himself a phenomenal sculptor and an abysmal painter. And I think there's a lesson somewhere in all of that for us, and that is that...
Lean
you know,
on
we
your
m-
own understanding.
Yeah, you know, we might all be best known for the things that we don't consider really our strongest point, you know.
Amen,
and it's when we're out of our element that the Lord often uses us the most.
Go where he says and do what he tells you, and
that's
my golly,
right.
You're going to end up doing good.
And of course, work well done is often our best witness for
and
the Lord.
And a rolling stone gathers no moss.
Especially if you got a chisel in your hand.
Sorry, back to you, Pat.
Well, hey, thanks, guys. I'm thinking of the Apostle Paul, probably thought, well, I'm a great church planner, you know, but he didn't know he was writing the Bible there, you know, along the way. So, okay, well, thanks for the look at Michelangelo today. Great man, one of the greatest artists ever to walk the face of the earth, and a man that loved the Lord and gave his talents to the Lord. So, good to hear about that. And, of course, I'm remindful, too, of Martin Luther, who surrounded himself with artists, Louis Corson, and poets and theologians, and you get guys like Handel and Schütz and Bach and John Milton and guys like Michelangelo. They're making a great, powerful statement for the culture and for the Lord. And so,
well, and we've really come along. We've come a long way since that day, Pat. You know, where we can put a crucifix in a jar of urine and get $300,000 for it as a piece of art.
That's
yes, siree, Bob.
You know.
We're really at the cultural apex, aren't we?
Pray for this country.
Oh,
we need
my
it.
Goodness.
Hey, Matt McAuliffe and Chris White here on the Daily Connection today, both pastors there at Trail Christian Fellowship. Thanks, guys, and we'll look forward to another great church history glimpse next month, paisanos.
Amen.
God bless.
Catch you later. Yep.